Welcome to another episode of Disruptive Healthcare. I am Lee Cantor, joined in studio with Mr. Stone Payton.
Good morning, sir. How you doing?
I am excited about today's show.
This is going to be fun. We have a very special guest that has flown in all the way from Portland, Oregon. Please welcome to the show, Miss Rebecca Hood. How you doing?
Good. Good morning.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Understand that you work for the Portland VA Medical Center.
I do.
So tell me a little bit about what's going on with the Portland VA.
Well, I work in the research division. So we're in a research lab right now, and we are researching Parkinson's.
How are the mice over there?
they
have good mice in Portland compared to other research centers?
No, you know what? Mine aren't really behaving this week. So.
Oh, did you run out of Harvard mice?
No.
Wait, you have to introduce.
Everybody knows who Lynn Hood is. She needs no introduction.
Oh, thank you. So, and if you notice it, and let me just say, in the interest of full disclosure here, there is the same last name here, and very proud of our daughter who did fly in last night specifically to be on this show.
So that way you could write off the plane fare?
You didn't tell me that. I didn't get that offer.
Nicely played.
Yeah. The fact that she has friends in town and it's 4-day weekend for her.
It's all a coincidence. Now, the reason you're here, though, is not just to because you're Lynn's daughter. It's to talk about kind of how the education system here in Georgia has produced such a wonderful example of a rising star in the healthcare world. Is that correct, Lynn?
Exactly. And also, I think you guys, I said, Rebecca's going to come with me to watch, and you guys said, oh, put her on the show. I'm like, yes, I can do that. So I told her, sorry, you're going to be on my show. You have to come. But she's the fact is of the matter is that she's a graduate from the public school system and from Georgia Tech state institution, and they've done real well by her.
Now, Rebecca, can you talk about like going through elementary, middle, and high school? When did you kind of start gravitating to science?
That's a good question. I know that I got science kits for Christmas a couple years and was always really interested in it. And I guess starting in elementary school, they offered Science Olympiad, and so I got involved in that, thanks to my parents.
This science is kind of neat, or like, because
she got out of class one Friday by going to the science fair orientation. That's what I
like. That club has donuts, so now I'm going to join that one.
Pretty much. I mean, it was always kind of encouraged. Science fair was always encouraged. Science Olympiad was encouraged. I don't know. It was just something to do.
But, like, were you involved in the band or other activities? So it was always science?
Yeah. And sports in high school when I got to high school. But, yeah, it was always science. And that was always kind of something in the background to do. And then when I went to college, I knew that I wanted to do something science-related, so I went to Georgia Tech.
Now, so when you were in high school, what were your colleges you were choosing from?
I think when it came down to it, it was UC San Diego, because I wanted to go to school on the beach.
I made the mistake of taking her there one time with me to visit a medical device company, and I took her along with me, and we put the top down on the convertible, and within 10 minutes, she goes, I want to go to college here.
Well, the fact that they had an excellent biology program didn't hurt.
Yeah, one of the tops in the nation. Yeah. That was a good excuse.
Mm-hmm. So that, and then Georgia Tech. And with the Hope Scholarship, there really wasn't a question about where I was going to go.
Now, biology, chemistry, like how'd you fall into biochemistry?
Well, I kind of switched my major around a couple times. Georgia Tech was pushing the biomedical engineering program, which is excellent. I have a friend that graduated, and I kind of wish I had stuck with that.
The Georgia Tech BME program, biomedical engineering, which is where you design the things that go into the body and the things that have to do anything medically focused, is ranked number 2 in the nation. And it's unique in that it's a public-private collaboration between a public university, Georgia Tech, and a private university, Emory University. And so apparently when you get your degree from that, you signed by both presidents.
Wow.
And so the students do, and it goes all the way through the PhD program. Excellent reputation. One of the big things that we talk about in Georgia is the talent that this program produces.
So, Rebecca, what is the latest on Parkinson's? Where are we? How much further do we need to go? What are you learning in your research?
So right now there really is no treatment that will slow the progression of the disease down. there are treatments. You can treat the symptoms, but you can't slow it down. And there's not really there's a lot of research right now, but there's not really a way to there's no early markers. There's no way to detect it really until people come in with the clinical symptoms. So
and what are the clinical symptoms? Give us a rundown.
It starts off with actually GI problems, loss of the sense of smell, and then, you know, the more classical, like problems moving, tremor, gait disorder, right, type of thing. Freezing while walking, falls tend to be a reason why a lot of people come into the clinics in the first place. And then they see a neurologist or movement disorder specialist and get diagnosed.
But no indication of early markers or any lifestyle or diet? We just don't have a handle on it yet, huh?
No, not yet. There's some evidence that there's a slight genetic component. The Michael J. Fox Foundation funds a lot of research about a specific gene mutation. But even then, that's not really an indication that someone will or won't get the disease.
Now, from in a university setting, how important is it these kind of private charities?
Incredibly.
Like the collaboration, like when Michael J. Fox gets involved and he starts throwing money around and starts doing fundraisers and bringing awareness to it, is that all of a sudden make working on Parkinson's more attractive in the sense that there's going to be more funding so you can do more things? Like, how does that collaboration work?
It does. It provides us, I don't know what proportion comes from like the VA funding or NIH funding or Michael J. Fox, but I know that with a grant that I think we're about to get, we can take someone on full time now. So it really, it has helped out a lot with our research funding situation.
So what's the process? Are you intentionally giving the mice Parkinson's and then observing and trying out different stuff? How does that work day to day in the lab?
So it kind of depends on what we're looking at. My most recent study and what I'm doing right now is kind of a neuroprotection study. So this is just sort of proof of principle, like, does this work? So what we do is we do the treatment, which right now is activating a certain area of the brain that is underactivated in Parkinson's patients. And then we give them Parkinson's. My boss right now has developed a progressive model that we think is a lot more clinically relevant than the other models that are out. And we do that, and then we just kind of test and see, like, did they develop behavioral deficits? And then we look at their brains and see what the actual protein depletion is in certain areas.
That's fascinating to me. Lynn, is there still a dearth in young females going into science, technology, education, math? Is there?
There actually, in certain areas, there is. You'll find it very heavily male, but not neuroscience. Rebecca just went through the interviews last week for the neuroscience PhD, the graduate program at OHSU.
So you're going to get a PhD.
I am.
Cool. Well, Dr. Rebecca.
after 15, with 15 people applying, they only had spots for five.
Yeah, 15 interviewed.
15 interviews, five selects, because that's all they have funding for.
Uh-huh.
That's a limiting thing. Right. Can you afford to have this person work
and
in your
lab? And of those 15, how many were female?
It was, I just told you, 11.
11.
Yeah.
And then how many of the five were female?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it was, so they offered spots to five, and I think it was three, or it may have been four. And so I think the official letters actually come out today for it. And then depending on other offers that people have gotten, they can decline, and there's a waiting list of a couple more people.
So you're looking at more women getting graduate degrees and moving on. So I think now med school has become more heavily female, that there's a larger percentage of women than men. I believe law school is the same thing, that you have more women than men. So you're seeing women push through and get through this. Now, we've done a good bit of reading. Rebecca and I both share the articles on women within science. And there's still a lot of discrimination. I mean, there's still a feeling that women are limited as far as how far they can go and as to their qualifications. And there was a very interesting story written by, let me make sure, there was a gender switch involved. I want to make sure I went the right way. So we had a man who was a professor who became a woman.
Aha.
And so,
just for science, just to see if you can do this study.
Yeah. This person is very committed.
I think there's a gender assignment, you know, some things, some issues going in there. But she overheard a couple of colleagues talking, and they said, well, you know, her brother is much more brilliant than she is.
And they were talking about the same person?
They're talking about the same person. A woman.
It's not funny, actually, but it's interesting.
I mean, it's, yeah, it's kind of sad. I mean, so you still see this. You see the heads of departments will be, but then this is the society as a whole. We're going to have a long talk about the discrimination and that sort of thing, but that's not what we came here for. So, but you do see a lot of women moving forward in this, but there's still a need in the schools to encourage it.
Yeah, and men are still getting tenure at higher rates as well.
But it all started, I mean, for you, yes, it's going to culminate in a doctorate and a very fruitful career, I'm sure, in researching these important things. But it all started way back in grade school, probably, this mindset, this affinity, mm-hmm. the science kit and the donuts,
kits,
right?
And the donuts. And I think it's great. This was Rebecca came through the DeKalb public school system. And back when it was good.
Nice. They could use a little good press right now, as I understand.
They could.
Was there any teacher there that was especially good mentor?
There was Mr. Davis in sixth grade. I remember he would do demonstrations for us, most of which involved fire.
fire, right, explosions, D, you know.
Yeah. I remember that. Rebecca came home and she's like, yeah, and he set things on fire today. This is the first week. She's enchanted with this. And by the way, she was in the magnet program. So that was an excellent, you know, again, an excellent offering. The fact that we had the Science Olympiad was encouraged, not necessarily taught to, but that the schools participated and encouraged Science Olympiad, which is a high school, middle school, late grammar school, really, middle school, high school competition, where you learn about different subjects and compete on a statewide level. DeKalb always did very well with that. And it was fun. It was fun to see these kids. Some of them, I tell you what, nothing like a bottle rocket. including my husband, who still talks about the bottle rockets. That was fun.
Well, what was the thing? We went to the Women in Technology, and there was a group. They did some robotic thing.
Well, yeah, there was a girls. Heavy emphasis on robotics, and then we interviewed the part of the team that were designing a Formula One car or something. I think some Formula
awesome.
One.
Awesome! Wow.
That was really cool.
Weren't they girls?
Yeah, it was all girls. It was all girls group, and they were going to like Monaco or something. I mean, they were going across the pond.
Ooh!
If I remember that right,
No, we didn't get to go to Monaco.
that wasn't a thing.
We got to go to Georgia State.
Wow.
I think we went down to Columbus or something.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one. That was an interesting
trip. Science Olympiad. And I went to Georgia. I got to, for Science Fair. I presented in the Coliseum.
That's true. There's a lot of programs in the school, and there was a great program. Tell me about Fernbank, your freshman year at Lakeside High School.
Yeah, it was STT, Scientific Tools and Techniques, I think, and it was great. It was for DeKalb County.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the first half of the day, we'd go to the museum, so either the Science Center or the Natural History Museum, and they'd teach us classes, so 3 hours. And we covered the same curriculum that they would in freshman biology, but it was cooler.
And you had specialists teaching each one of the subjects. You got to do a lot more hands-on. The ability to put your hands on and do things to experience this, because I remember seeing Rebecca's face. She was working on a science fair project on growth of
algae
and weightlessness, mm-hmm. which we created in the house by you spin a jar at a certain speed, and it creates a sense. It creates the same effect as weightlessness.
It should be constant free.
Don't your arms get tired when you do
that? There's a little motor.
It's again, a rock tumbler motor.
But this hands-on thing makes me wonder if we can't take more advantage of technology to transfer the basic foundation, theoretical, bookwork, memorization kind of stuff, and free up time, money, and other resources for the more hands-on stuff. I mean,
exactly. But she'd been counting cells. We'd gone to an electron microscope or something at the. Okay, tell me.
Why don't we let her tell the story?
Since sorry,
she's the one who did it.
Because I'm her mother, and I'd like to speak for her.
No, it's just a big difference between. It was a light microscope that was hooked up to a computer.
Now you've
embarrassed her.
It was a big old microscope.
Do different things.
So she, but she finishes and she's just, her face is shining. She's like, this is what I want to do. And you still do.
Really? That was a moment for you?
Yeah, it was. And I remember that.
There was some clarity that you're like, you know, I really like this and this is a path I'm going to follow.
Mm-hmm. Because I had set up the experiment and I designed it and spun it. And we went to go pick up the algae in the middle of a family reunion in North Georgia.
We had to drive down and meet somebody in a parking lot to transfer the algae.
Get that bootleg algae.
Exactly. It was like a drug deal in the...
And all the relatives were impressed with your findings?
No.
Not so much.
Part of your Christmas card. Now, what about from a peer standpoint? And you're deciding at an early age that this is a path you're going to go down. Did you have friends that were also like, that's awesome, me too? Or like, were you getting kind of support internally, like from your peers?
Yeah, absolutely. Most of my – I've got a close group of friends from college, and one of whom – got his master's, and then another one is doing an MD-PhD program at UNC Chapel Hill. So we're kind of on different tracks, but doing similar things. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like this wasn't a surprise. And,
right. What about high school?
That I was pretty atypical. You know, I was involved in science, and I had friends that were.
You had to sit at the science girl table, didn't you?
That's like the peanut allergy table.
No. But see, she also did sports, and so she was.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Okay. I was the jock as well.
Yeah, so she got to sit with the jock table instead of with the science table. But, yeah, the time and the energy put into it was a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But we were fortunate that her class in her school were a group that valued smartness. That this was not, you know, they weren't looking to girls to dumb themselves down.
Right.
That this was a group of people who were all excited about learning, who, you know, a lot of whom who did go on to college and pursue careers, not necessarily in science. But the Fernbank experience, it did a lot for a lot of kids.
Mm-hmm. And then how was that implemented? Was that like every day you would go there or weekly?
It was every day for the first semester.
Really?
A whole semester?
Yeah.
Do they still have
half
that now?
A day? I don't know.
I think they do. I think they were trying to get rid of it. There was a petition that somebody sent me that got sent around because, like, all the testimonials and everything from kids that went through it, somebody said, you know, like, he's a current doctor and said, you know, this is what got me interested in science.
Right.
So we got to control a planetarium and do a presentation on it. We got to trap birds and drift nets. Mm-hmm. And look
and
at their
hold,
molting.
She got to hold. She came home. I held a bird in my hand today.
Yeah.
But like that's an important thing, though, for when a city has resources like that to be able to leverage them in ways that are not kind of like the obvious ways. You know, the museum is sitting there probably empty during these times or not that used, and you can engage a bunch of kids every day. I mean,
mm-hmm. It's a terrific program. It's the Fernbank. Now, to reveal some idea of how old I am, I grew up around the corner from Fernbank, from the Science Center. And so I lived very close to it before the Science Center was built, when it was just woods, and we would go play up there and go to summer camp and that sort of thing. So putting that facility in and then opening it up not just to DeKalb County schools but to the entire state made a huge difference. I mean, where else is there a planetarium around here that services and lets kids go in and take a nice nap while they show the stars in the sky? It's and practice the whisper. If you whisper over here, you can hear it all the way across the room. But Rebecca had help from Fernbank, from some people there, when she did a science fair program on what was it that was in my refrigerator?
It was non-pathogenic E. coli.
Non-pathogenic.
Exactly. And so when I yelled upstairs to her and said, Rebecca, get your E. coli, and I forgot the non-pathogenic part of it, get your E. coli out of my refrigerator.
Well, it had to be refrigerated.
What
we
do
have
you
a downstairs
expect her to
refrigerator.
Do?
There's a downstairs refrigerator.
Everyone should have a science refrigerator right. In their home if they're serious about
in
supporting
their clean room.
Their kids. In their clean room, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, my base room is not a clean room. And there's not just E. coli in it. I think it has something to do with a fermented substance
That's
called
another
beer.
Study she's working on.
She's a good studier of the beer thing.
So while pursuing this doctorate, it's going to have an impact on the work that you're doing, right? How do you adjust the time and priorities, or do you think it actually might support and positively impact the work you're doing?
So I am lucky enough to be able to stay in my current lab for my doctorate. So
So you're all in with Parkinson's?
Mm-hmm.
So you'll be working with, and who's your boss?
Charlie Meschel. Hi, Charlie. He said he was going
to
listen.
Shout out to Charlie.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I'll have to take classes and I'll have to take time away from work, which is a little bit unfortunate because I'm in the middle of this awesome project right now.
Right.
But, you know, after that, classes are kind of part-time and I'll be able to come into the lab and do what I can. And then that's the first 2 years. And then for the next 3 years, I'm working full-time again and working towards my dissertation.
So now, what are the kind of milestones and victories that happen during this kind of research? Like, is there like all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, something huge, or is it these kind of little incremental
If we
wins?
Can find something that will slow down the progression, then that's going to be huge. And if we can find something that can translate, that's another big thing. Because we work in a rodent model right now, and it's a good model for what we're doing, but it's a big gap between rodents and humans. So if we can find something that slows down the progression, that's going to be really big, something that can restore. So in Parkinson's, there's a loss of cells in a certain area of the brain. If we can restore those cells, that's going to be big. And so we're doing some stuff. Exercise seems to be a little bit restorative, but I'm really excited about my project and this brain region activation. And so eventually we'll translate that to a restoration project and look at that.
Is there a way to... just do it through like computer models, or you need to have some animals?
We need to have animals. Yeah. It's just, there's too much going on. You know, if we target one protein or something like that, then yeah, like theoretically this is what it should do, but you don't know what the off target effects are going to be. You know, you don't know how effective it's going to be, if it's going to really reach the target at all, that sort of thing. Like, we have to do it with animals, which is too bad.
But you could get rich with the off-target effects, right? That happens all the time. Is that the right term for like what happened with Viagra? They were trying to fix one thing?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Has there been
that one from the previous show.
Has there been a moment then in any of your research so far where you're like, oh my God, something happened. Everybody's like high-fiving each other.
Yeah, with this project, actually, we got an opportunity. These guys from Harvard had this special breed of genetically modified mice.
So seriously, Harvard mice.
Yeah. And so it was a project that my boss wanted to look at, that Charlie wanted to look at. He's kind of been talking about activating this certain area of the motor cortex for a while, just to see what would happen in Parkinson's. And so we got an opportunity with these mice. It was just a really nice model to be able to do it. And it was completely protective against our Parkinson's model. So, I mean, the ones that we hadn't injected at all with this neurotoxin that caused Parkinson's, they looked exactly the same.
So then when you inject them, so everybody's nervous, like, oh, is this going to work or not, right? Mm-hmm. And then it works. So what happens in the lab?
High five.
The celebration?
Yeah. Like, so what is, like, as soon as, are you rushing to the lab, you know, when you're going to tell if it's going to work or not? Like, how's
that? Yeah. And so we kind of ran it. So we do immunohistochemistry to look at protein expression. And so all the mice were numbered, and Charlie was actually in the lab after they had been run before.
And you don't know what number is what?
Exactly.
That's blind, right?
Well, yeah. And so I didn't run the histochemistry at all, but Charlie was looking at the results, and he divided them perfectly into the two groups.
Right.
And knew exactly.
So he knew which are the mice.
Yeah, just by the protein concentration.
Right.
So, and that was a big deal. And I like to be a little more cautious about it. And so I waited until I did the analysis, and there was no difference. And we were so excited. We Skyped with our collaborators, and they were excited. And then Charlie presented. We take part in a journal club with neurologists and other basic scientists.
This is how you guys go crazy.
Yeah.
Journal
journal club. presented it there. You know, so it's.
So when these things happen, that just is more validation that you're on the right path and this is exactly what you want to be doing.
Yeah. Exactly. And up until that point, I had gotten mostly negative data from my...
Don't you get discouraged?
Because that would, I would think,
exactly.
be frustrating.
Yeah.
Like, man, I'm just banging my head against a wall.
And it is. So I did that for about a year, and then I got this positive data, and it was great, and it's wonderful, and that's why. You know, it's kind of a reminder. So you get lucky. You hit on it.
So one of my favorite stories, because Rebecca's kept me up to date, is what's going on with this, and telling me along the way, as much as I understand from, I mean, you know, his stick journey. Chemistry. But she was telling me that they have a problem that one of the ways they look at gait is they have a camera and they put the mice on a little clear glass. So tell them about this and the problem with the Harvard mice.
So normally we've got this fancy system where it's got a camera underneath a clear treadmill. And so you can run them. And then there's software and you kind of outline the pods. And there's software that can measure. It's like 47 indices or something like that. Like, you know, paw angle and propulsion and all this sort of thing. So normally that works really fine. The strain of mice that we use are black and they've got, you know, little pink paws and it's really easy to pick up because there's enough contrast between the two. The Harvard mice are brown. They're very cute, but they're brown. And I didn't realize it when I ran it, but when I tried to go back and analyze, it can't really pick up. The software just can't pick up the distinction between the two. So I emailed one of the guys in the company and, you know, like kind of sent him some of the video to see what we should do about it. And he told me to paint the mice. So
you paint their paws?
Yeah. So Charlie and I had to go out to the grocery store that day and go pick up red food coloring. And then I had to spend the rest of the day holding mice and painting their paws.
And then the red food coloring couldn't affect the results?
The way that they filter the images and everything, it picks up the red a little bit better. Mm-hmm. It helps to enhance it. So it did help.
But what a great solution. I mean,
maybe
that's just
the
good,
cure,
clear
the
thinking.
The cure for Parkinson's is red food coloring.
Exactly.
Maybe that's what we learned.
Red dye number, whatever it is, that's very bad for you. But yeah, the little, and they would clench their little paws up.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
They didn't like that?
No, they didn't. I mean, I assume it, I don't know, tickled. But yeah, so I do it and they clench and I kind of have to get the paintbrush in between. And
so is it too early yet for you to have submitted a prospectus for your dissertation topic, or do you have a feel for what you want to do your dissertation on?
It'll be Parkinson's.
It'll be Parkinson's
project.
Related.
Yeah. So it'll be this motor cortex activation.
And this is like the public announcement about it because you haven't presented on this yet outside of the university, correct?
No. Yeah, Charlie's presenting a poster on it, I assume.
He is now.
Weeks.
He is now. Charlie, you're on the hook, bud.
Well, I'm supposed to be making it this week. But we haven't actually gotten confirmation from the meeting people that it's accepted, even though it's in a couple weeks, which
scientists
is atypical.
May not be the most organized.
Get off really? The dime, meeting people. Let's get this thing really. Okay, so let's say that all this continues to look very promising. Mm-hmm. Then how does it work? Then you move to primates, or what's the next step in the progression?
Probably primates. OHSU has a primate research center, so we could probably talk to somebody. We don't actually work with them, and none of us know the surgical techniques for primates, but I'm sure we'd have to start a collaboration with somebody that did.
But that's more high-fiving and journaling at that, at
yes.
that
yes.
point, right?
That's champagne.
So, and then you go on to the human. We're
it's
a decade away from
years.
Being. Yeah.
Right.
But the thing we talked about with Susie last week with clinical trials is that, you know, there's so many different things you try, so many roads that end up being dead ends. And then you have one that looks promising. There's a lot of this going on. One thing that Rebecca did not have a problem when she packed up and drove as far away as possible from her parents. Still don't know why, except that Portland's an awesome place. But she came out of Georgia Tech with a lot of experience, went straight into a job and got experience. Would you talk a little bit about how people, even at a high school level, you had some high school students that did internships, didn't you, with some of your researchers?
Yeah, there's there's a high school in Camas, Washington, which is close to Portland, that has a really good science program and sends some of its students. So two of its students came and did a research project that ended up getting published. And then one of the guys, Nick, is now at Penn, also doing Parkinson's. I think he's in a Parkinson's lab. Yeah, they just have a different model. But he's in a Parkinson's lab. And then he came back last summer to join us. And then he's coming back. He's supposed to come back again this summer. We've got our fingers crossed. So he got involved in high school, and he's doing it all the way through college.
And there's the same thing here. When you were at the Emory lab, because you worked in a cardiovascular research lab through Emory, there were some high school students involved with that, weren't there?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. We had a couple high school students come through for a couple weeks during the summer.
So you can get started very early with these
kinds
of programs.
Right, if you're interested, there's opportunity.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then what I will say from based upon my many years ago journalism experience and what Rebecca has seen much more recently is that when you're in college, take advantage of the opportunity to work in labs, to do in, so for me it was journalism. I worked on the student newspaper, which of course is an anachronism these days. But for her, she worked, she had a professor. She was able to work in his lab for a semester. She got in with another lab and she worked there doing cancer research for a couple of years. And so the opportunity to participate at the student level is just invaluable.
And I was really lucky that Georgia Tech so highly encouraged undergraduate research, and I didn't realize how valuable it was at the time.
Because some colleges don't do that?
Yeah, or, you know, like they do a senior project, and so like somebody, and that's good. I mean, you kind of, you're there at the inception, and you follow it through, and you present it at the end of your senior year. But I was able to get about 3.5 years of research experience, and I got a fellowship, and I was really involved in a lab and a project. Right. And that's how I got hired in Portland, because I just had more research experience. And since I got hired, and then Charlie was my advocate and really helped me out in getting into graduate school. So, I mean, I'm incredibly thankful for Georgia Tech and getting me involved in research as early as I did.
Now,
I know, I see you picking. I was just about to ask Rebecca if she's going to be here that long. Are you flying back before this SEMDA thing gets going?
I am. I'm sorry.
Is that okay. Would you be interested in attending if you could? That's not your thing.
I would. You know, I like medical device stuff. That's not my research right now, but it's always interesting.
She would support her mom in this pursuit.
Well, and mom and I used to go to conferences together.
Yeah.
I'd go for the science. Mom would go for the clients.
That's true. And the networking.
Tag teamed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it was fun. It was a way for her to see the business side,
right,
which a lot of the researchers don't see, for her to realize that the end result of this is twofold. One, you want to help people. You want to help make them better. And two, you want to have a viable company out of this. And so if you need to have both of those, because if you don't have a viable company, nobody's going to produce that drug or device that's going to help people, that's going to help with the quality of care. So we're talking about both of those areas at SEMDA next week. Ta-da! It's the last. Listen, it's the last.
Is this it? Is this the last promo?
This is the last one. Last promo for this. Southeastern Medical Device Association next Tuesday, the 19th and the 20th. We do have a few openings for volunteers and for student admissions, as a matter of fact. We've got 10 posters. We have 20 presenting companies. We have a couple dozen outstanding speakers. The kind of thing that I'm looking at their bios going, wow, I'm impressed. We have.
And you're going, another word I can't pronounce.
No, they actually, most of the bios are okay. Their biographies are okay. But we've got people coming in from across the country who are going to be speaking at this. We have some of the top investors, ranging from the traditional VCs all the way to a guy that's going to talk about crowdfunding. We have business development people talking. We've got quality systems and marketing. I'm not doing that one. You get to hear from somebody else. And social media. So it's a full range in a full 2 days. In a gala party on Tuesday night. And we'll recognize 2 Spotlight Award winners, who I'm not going to tell you yet because it's a secret. But we'll recognize a couple people who are making some great contributions. And it really looks to be one of the best conferences we've ever had. And if people are interested, we can still take registrations. SEMDA, SEMDA.net.
Now, you mentioned volunteers. So there's opportunities for people to volunteer. And what would they be doing as a volunteer?
They would be helping with the registration. So they work for a few hours and they attend the rest of the that day.
So that's a good opportunity.
It's a very good opportunity. And we have a special discount rate for students, which is something like $75. They don't get to come to the gala dinner, which is more than that $75 cost per ticket. But they do get to network. They get to build these relationships and they get to learn about the real world and what really faces companies today in the medical device field.
Well, Rebecca, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio this morning.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, well, you're welcome back anytime. And, Lynn, you knocked another one out of the park. Man, you always show up with great guests.
Well, thanks. So this was your idea, and it's a little bit different than some of our typical ones, but this is the beginning of, you know, this is someone start off in their career. It's
That's
an
right.
exciting
it's where
thing
it begins.
To sing.
Good stuff. All right, this
thanks,
is Lee
guys.
Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next week on Disruptive Healthcare.